Hello and welcome back to Season 4, Episode 6 of the Make Every Word Count podcast. I'm your host Sam Gregory and today we're going to be talking about ghostwriting. Now I am the first one to admit it is not a topic that I am familiar with, so we will have a very long interview today with our special guest Tony Horn, who is an expert ghostwriter. He will be taking us through what ghostwriting involves, how his process works, and what kind of people would use ghostwriting. He does touch on memoirs and non-fiction books. I do know that some people would use ghostwriting for fiction books. There's no shame in using a ghostwriter if that's what you want to do, if there's an idea and perhaps you just don't feel that you have, you know, the skills or the time to do the job yourself. But I do think that it's important to give it a go first before you consider hiring anyone. I do know that a lot of people recently have started using AI as a kind of, I won't even, you know, insult ghostwriters by calling it a ghostwriter, but, you know, generating ideas, but when the idea is really just from someone else's work. So I would definitely not recommend doing anything like that. Writing is supposed to be hard. It's supposed to take a long time. And the first draft is always supposed to suck. And that's just facts. I understand being unsure of what you want to write, of what you want to say, worrying about grammar, spelling, all that sort of thing. I would rather work with an author that has a good idea and fix what they have, because all that stuff can be fixed. But if they have a brilliant idea, that can, you know, turn into a great book. They just need a little bit of help. On the other hand, there are plenty of people who can write a book. Again, are they actually writing them? It makes me wonder sometimes. With very, you know, flowery language, big words, and they really have nothing to say. And in my opinion, those are the worst kind of books, because spelling and grammar don't make a book. It's the idea. It's the passion. It's the, you know, the need to tell a story. So if it is something you would consider using a ghostwriter, you know, even before you do that, I would say, please give it a go yourself. There is help out there in all areas. And, you know, it's not, you're going to have to pay a little bit of money to get it. Of course you are. But at least you know that what you've got at the end, that finished product, is going to be through your own hard work and with the help of professionals. So let's jump straight into our interview with Tony.
We are joined today by former Breakfast Radio host turned ghostwriter, Tony Horn. Thank you for joining us today, Tony.
What a pleasure, Sam. Thank you for having me.
That's good to hear from you. So we were talking today about the topic of ghostwriting, and I was wondering if you could explain the concept of ghostwriting to the audience for those who may not know.
It's amazing how many times I've been asked to explain it. Ghostwriters have come much more into the public conversation in the last couple of years, Prince Harry's book Spare being a notable example. But historically, I think it's been a bit like magicians and the magic circle, dark arts. You know, we don't really talk about it. And ghostwriters generally are getting a lot more acknowledgement. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing is open for debate. But a ghostwriter is somebody who will write your memoir, but it's not exclusive to life stories. There's a lot of fiction ghostwriters out there, surprisingly, too. And one of the main reasons that people hire a ghostwriter is obviously lack of know-how. Writing a book is something that many people do, and most of us are untrained to do in life. Your life experiences will make a good book, but how do you actually build and construct that book? So lack of know-how, lack of ability, but also in today's world, lack of time and lack of stamina to see a project through are two big reasons why people will use a ghostwriter. And how does it work? Well, I ask people to write down 15 bullet points to their story, really simple stuff. So for me, that would be born in Chessington, 1971, Chessington, Surrey. Famous for a zoo and now a world of adventures. Number two, went to Tiffin School for boys. Oh, I missed out my primary school. And there's a point in itself because people aren't very good at telling you their story in chronological order. So the bullet points should focus people's mind. And then, Sam, it comes down to two things. Now, other ghostwriters might go, I'll come on. But for me, it's about action and emotion. What happened in your life? How did you feel about those events? One without the other is just a list. So that's really how the ghostwriter in me works, and that's a sort of broad overview of the ghostwriting process.
That's great. I mean, yeah, as you were saying there about ghostwriting in general, I think for a long time there was plenty of celebrities who would come out with books and they were obviously being ghostwritten. And they would, you know, they wouldn't have given credit to their ghostwriter. It was all like, oh yeah, I did it, I did it, and absolutely was not true. But yeah, I do think it is becoming a lot more, you know, publicized, and people are learning more about them. I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing because, I mean, at the end of the day, I don't. I mean, would Prince Harry even have time to sit down and write a memoir or anything like that?
Well, money buys you time, and he's
Yeah.
got money. He's obviously got his, variety of interests and charities. But, perhaps the focus and the know-how are reasons why he might have chosen a ghostwriter. There is a debate actually in one of the writing unions at the moment as to whether ghostwriters should automatically be credited. It's a lot more common in America. For me personally, I have a slightly different take because I had a public life as a breakfast radio host for many, many years, which, it goes with the territory, but it's not something that I'm overcomfortable with. I'd be more than happy to sort of make stars of the people whose memoirs I write and be behind the scenes. And also, I'm not daft. I'm smart enough to realize that if you ghostwrite the book, you ghostwrite the blimmin' acknowledgements, the first couple of pages. And could give yourself a little mention in there. And what I do when I write the acknowledgements is I subtly change my title, if you like, from ghostwriter to editor. So I don't leave people with that, which in the past has sometimes been that little sort of dirty feeling that, oh, well, he didn't write his own book, which is, of course, the accusation you mentioned labeled at many celebrities.
Yeah, I can understand that. And yeah, I suppose that is a good way. I do agree. I think you should get acknowledgement. I mean, I suppose it depends on what, you know, what sort of, you know, contract you have set up with the author as well. But yeah, I would agree that if you write, if you put the words on paper, there you need some sort of acknowledgement in there.
Well, it's not essential for me, as I said. And also, you have to consider that some famous people are a brand and they wouldn't want to give you a whiff at any kind of help. Though, logically, you would think that probably the more famous the person, the more likely a ghost writer has been, hired. The fiction one is the interesting one, really, I think. I question how much work the client will put into a fiction ghostwriting project. Whereas, obviously, if it's a memoir, it is still your life story that you are telling, even though a hired hand is going to do the legwork.
Absolutely. Do you write your own books, or would it be strictly ghostwriting?
Have a good story on this. Like a lot of people, I always knew that I wanted to write. And guess what? I didn't really know what. I did write newspaper columns for many, many years, in association with the radio show. But in about 2008, I think, I went to see my accountant and said, we want to go to Australia. And he said, well, you haven't got enough money. And I said, well, what if I write a travel book or two? Surely then that's justifiable business expenses. And I can't remember what the answer was, but that's what I did. So I wrote a book of my family driving from Cairns to Adelaide in Australia. And then I ghost wrote my now ex-wife's version of the same story from her point of view. So I got to slag myself off in a book that I wrote, which is an unusual scenario. But from that point onwards, and there's a set of circumstances that sort of unfolded that meant I had a very high profile. It wasn't my first book, but let's call it first book after that. And after that, I've really never been short of work. And I always say that when I'm short of work is the time that I will write my own stuff. And I've got a few projects, on scraps of paper on the desk, but at the moment, I'm grateful for the work, and that other stuff can wait. But I also think as well, I find it much easier morphing into somebody else and doing that rather than doing my own stuff. And I find the process of ghostwriting quite easy, but guess what? It's because I work really, really hard in the conversations that we will have, making the notes. So I'll ask tough questions, and people will often say to me, I've not even told my partner that. But we build up such a close rapport. It really is one to one, and everything's on the table. Everything is up for discussion, but of course, not everything goes into the edit. So I will take some secrets to the grave, but I do find that, and maybe it's a reflection on radio years, but I'm very, very comfortable morphing into somebody else's memoir than perhaps dreaming up my own stuff.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of a vulnerability there as well when it is your own stuff, when you're putting it out there for the first time, and it's like, are people going to like this? Whereas you say, you've got that sort of anonymity behind the scenes for a memoir.
Yeah, and of course, I've remained close friends with almost everybody that I've written a book for, some of whom have passed away. And there's a responsibility, particularly in some of those books. I'll just mention a couple. A book, If Only, by Terry West, who was the brother of Leslie Ann Downey, Moore's murders victim. The
Wow.
Moore's murders n never goes away. Terry passed away 2024. And then the late PC David Rathband, the policeman blinded by Row Moat. I mean, almost every year I get a TV company ringing me up saying, we're going to do a documentary about it. Often that's the last I hear from them, partly because that story is always told from the gunman's point of view rather than the victim's. And it's a bit predictable, a bit TV'd. But it's over 10 years since that story unfolded in public. And, David Rathband took his own life. And I made a promise to him that I would always speak up for him afterwards. So, it's not a burden, but it's a heavy package. And I am able to on to other projects, but all of this sort of accumulates. I think I'm past that sort of self-doubt about if I were to write anything myself, would it be any good or not? Because I think you get past that self-doubt when you do all those years of radio. But trust me, I started in professional radio in about 1989, but it was only 9/11, 2001, where I really felt comfortable and confident talking about life, emotions, experiences. And it was just the whole 9/11 experience that brought out so many words from so many people. But that's, almost a decade after I started doing professional radio. But I think that I've sort of got a bit of an attitude towards it now, which is like, whatever, you either like it or you don't, in terms of stuff that I would do, not in terms of my clients who I desperately want to give that voice to. I want them to be really happy with their work.
Is there anybody whose memoir you would like to write if you had the chance?
That's a great, great question. And I think the honest answer to it is the beauty of the job is that you never know what's going to be in your inbox. Now, it's a famine and a feast. It's been a bit quiet for a couple of months, but suddenly there are five things in my inbox in the last 72 hours. And I'm a massive believer in, and I don't use this word as disparagingly as it sounds, but I'm a firm believer in ordinary people, extraordinary stories. And think it's true that everybody has a book in them. Whether you can reach an audience is a difficult question. You know, that's the real challenge. But there are people who never heard of or met who have incredible stories. In terms of a memoir of somebody that we might know, well, you know, most of those, well, I was going to say most of them that I would be interested in have probably been written, but there's always someone that comes out and surprises you. And then there's that small category of very famous people who will not write a memoir, and you have to wonder, you know, what's in their past that they either don't want to put out there, or they value their privacy that much that they don't feel the need. So I've skirted around that question, but I'll never excuse me, I'll never dismiss the idea of a celebrity memoir, because it's obviously going to pay well and it's going to raise your profile. But you know, let's understand that once you've reached a certain age in life, most people have lived a few lives themselves, and those stories as much merit, if not the same size of platform as, you know, some of those people we might perhaps crave to write for.
That's true, and it only takes sort of one event sometimes to create something huge as well.
That's very true, because some of the stories that I've ghostwritten are literally people who, you know, found themselves at the center of a story. I don't, the phrase 15 minutes of fame is used quite lightly to obviously, you know, to talk about people perhaps who might have been on talent shows. So Steve Brookstein, who won the first X Factor in 2004, I wrote his memoir, and people talk about 15 minutes of fame in that sort of context. There's that other side, that darker side of not real fame, if you like, but not notoriety, but public glare. And obviously people like Terry West and David Rathbone, who I mentioned, they sort of fall in that category. And these are people who were going about their business, and then in a moment their world's changed. And that's hard for them to deal with day to day, let alone express in a memoir.
And I think, as you said, like a lot of the focus tends to be on, the perpetrator and perhaps like a main victim, and it's rarely on like the people on the sidelines or the relatives who, like, obviously they've got that glare on them and they have people, looking at them, but at the same time, they're almost forgotten too.
Yeah, and that's why it's really important to, you know, give them a voice, and also understand, you know, the passage of time. I mean, there are people out there that are still fighting for justice decades on. Hillsborough, a great example. At the moment, at the beginning of 2025, I think it's on Sky Atlantic, Lockerbie. You know, Lockerbie is a long time ago, and people have to break down walls, barriers, corruption, conspiracies to get justice and to get a voice. And the greatest example in recent memory, of course, is the post office scandal, where for years they were ignored, they were refused meetings, and then suddenly everybody wants to come to their party. And I'm tempted to say rightly so, but of course, it's also very hypocritical of those that ignored what was going on in plain sight. But those people, they need a voice. They've had a voice. But there are many, many other stories like that of the people that are just not being heard, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just as well. I know obviously this is your job, and obviously we need the work, but would you recommend a ghostwriter off the bat to somebody wanting to, share their story, or would you encourage them to at least try writing it themselves first?
It's a great question, and you know, essentially an honest person, and I can do business. I know what something is worth. But most of the time, when people ring me for the first call, I think I try and persuade them that they can write their own memoir. And I know that when we speak for the first time, I can give people confidence. They can come off the phone buzzing. And I also understand why that is the case. And I think it's this, because someone once said to me that at every stage in life, we have like a teacher, you know, so we're born and, you know, hopefully we have parents and we go to school and there is a teacher. And then later on in life, we might zone in on something like sport or dance or gym, or then we might need a mortgage, or we might need a pensions guy, we might need a wedding planner. Everything that life throws at you, there are coaches available. But when you sit down and stare out the window and say, I am going to write my memoir this year, it's a very solitary process. And I think people fail or don't believe in themselves because they simply don't have anybody to share that experience with. And if you say to your friends and family, you know, this year I'm going to write my memoir, they'll mockingly turn around to you in a few months' time and go, how's that book going? You know, because they don't quite believe it. But the other side of that is the sheer beauty of beavering away night after night for months, knowing that you are sitting on something brilliant and beautiful. And yeah, you might not sell a shed load of books, but that sort of, it's not the same as a pregnancy, but you know, that 9 months or so you're working on giving birth to that book is, it's a beautiful feeling of sitting on a secret, as long as you can get yourself to that stage. And sometimes I mentor people, you know, just being at the end of the phone so that they know that they're not alone and that they are respected in their dreams. But a lot of people do come back to me and say, I can't do this. You know, can you take it on? And there's no shame at all. There is absolutely no shame, as we previously discussed. If you think of it in very simple terms, if you open a Word document, it'll say naught, 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 naught words. By the time you finish that, memoirs are coming in about 65 to 95,000 words. And that seems a lot. And when I was at school and they used to say, do a side of A4, and you think, I can't do a side of A4 on that. And now I look at that word count when I'm starting and I think, right, here we go. But it's only having been through the process so many times that I've got that confidence, vision, and belief. And it is, you know, if you really, really want to do it, if you really want to do it, don't be fearful of asking someone to hold your hand through the process.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think, as you said, it's a confidence thing, and it can be daunting, but at the end of the day, you know, I don't think nobody's going to know your life better than you, so you might as well give it a go and see what comes out of it.
The biggest problem, though, Sam, I think, is that people don't understand that you've got to go to work as if you were going to work. So, yes. Right to have downtime from writing, but you do need some sort of structure, you know. So if you're
Definitely.
going to say, I'm going to just try and do an hour and a half at 7 o'clock at night, you know, go to work and respect that job in the same way that you would the person that actually pays your wages. You've got to have a structure, and that's, you don't need to be rigid, you don't need to be burning the midnight, you don't need to succumb to all the cliches of what a writer is, but just better to do a little often than a lot every now and then.
Absolutely. I think, yeah, there's a little bit of a romanticized view sometimes about, I think we see it on screen, on TV, where you see, you know, the montage of them writing, and it takes like 5 minutes. In reality, it can take a year or more. And I don't think they just want to invest that time, but they need to be prepared to if they really want to create a good product.
Yeah, and this is pretty much all I do now. And people will go, no, there's no way he can do that. But I can write 1,000 words an hour. But guess what? I can't do that every can't do it every day, and I can't really do it unless I'm on a crazy deadline. I can't really do it for more than 4 hours at a time. And one of the reasons that I can do it is because I've made good notes in the conversations. So at that point, am I a glorified secretary? Well, maybe, but I've done the psychological work beforehand. And, for all those people who say, I just can't start, what I do is I just start and I let my fingers take over. And there's a great feeling when your fingers are, 3 or 4 seconds ahead of the mind and you are literally flowing.
Yeah, that's good advice for any kind of writing at all. So where could potential clients find you then? Do you have a website?
Yeah, I do. I mean, it's quite interesting how many writers don't, or how many writers don't use social media. Or use it properly. I mean, I'll just say a quick word on that often you'll only hear from people when the day their book is released, and they'll go, "Yay, happy publication day! My book is out today." And it's so wrong this for two reasons. Because one, you're making the assumption that people buy the book on the day it comes out if they're interested, whereas most people buy books, unless you're J.K. Rowling, most people buy them on recommendation or from reminders from Amazon. People who bought this also bought that. And the other thing is, if you've been working on your book for 6 months, 9 months, 12 months, 2 years, why haven't you been reeling people in, making them interested about you, so that by the time you actually say your book's ready, they feel they've already got a relationship with them? But most authors, they just can't see this. Website for me is secretsofaghostwriter.com. There's about half a dozen short videos on there that explain the process of ghostwriting, how it's going to work for you, what it's going to cost time-wise. And there's a few other things on there, like if you want someone to mentor you and think you can do it yourself, as we've discussed. And obviously, big mistake not to do it. I put samples of some of the books that I've ghostwritten on there. And again, some ghostwriters don't do this because they cite confidentiality issues with their client. I think if you're a decent ghostwriter and you've got a decent relationship with your client, it shouldn't ever be a problem. And put them on there. What's the first thing you're going to ask if you want to hire a ghostwriter? They're going to say, "What have you written? And can I see some of your work?" So I hope that my website answers most of the questions that people would have before they, have a conversation with me about their project.
Well, that's great. I will be sure to add that link then to the About section of the podcast so that people can find you. Thank you very much for coming on today. It was lovely to talk to you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been brilliant.
Well, thank you very much to Tony for that interview. It was great to hear from him. A lot of information there. If ghostwriting is something that you want to consider, be sure to check out his website. The link will be in the About section of the podcast. As you know, this is our final episode of season 4. We will go into season 5 in the autumn of this year, and recording will begin in June. If you would like to take part, or if you have an idea of a topic that you would like to hear more about, please do get in touch. You can visit our website, skgauthorservices.com, or you can email us at skgauthorservices@gmail.com. Thank you very much for listening, and please remember to make every word count.